Ann Gadzikowski, and I graduated in 1990 in the old, old building. last year at the NAEYC conference, Barbara, you sat on a panel and you talked about the upcoming revision of developmentally appropriate practice. And then I think the next day, Jillian McMee sat on a panel on play. And during the question and answer period, there were a number of attendees who stood up and expressed alarm about the upcoming changes to developmentally appropriate practice and felt that play was in danger. And I was wondering if you thought that sparks are going to fly in Dallas this year, if there's going to...
Well, I'm not going this year. We're going to have another repeat of it, but unfortunately I can't travel this year, so I'm not going to be there. The issue, as I was trying to frame it, is not whether play is important for children. Absolutely, you can't know anything about child development without knowing that children play, that it serves purposes for play, it serves purposes for development, all that sort of good stuff. The question that we were trying to address was, do you have to play in school all the time? Could you maybe do other things in school, particularly if you're only there 2.5 hours, and play at home? Or, my notion is, even if you didn't have free play at school, the kids would play anyhow. My favorite story is being in a Montessori program where the child was washing the table in the 14 different steps for washing the table, and like talking away to herself the whole time, clearly playing while she was washing the table. So kids will play no matter how you structure it. But you can use their interest in play to structure it so that they are learning things more than they would with just plain free play. So what I was trying to say was not that play's unimportant, but that how we teach children in various programs of various lengths of time might be have a different way of handling play than if you had a child for 12 hours a day.
So
this was interpreted, however, as saying children don't need to play.
Right, and it's also was interpreted as play and learning are two different things. And since they've come to preschool to learn, we won't do play. But I'd say that in the hands of skilled teachers, in the hands of any kid, play and learning are the same thing. But in the hands of skilled teachers, you can extend play. You can carry play into all kinds of different directions that it didn't start at. You can become very interactive around it. And so I think that if it's 2.5 hours, there's still absolutely room in there for play. But teachers need to know what to do with that play without being too didactic.
Yes, go ahead, Barbara.
Well, I guess I would argue that the kind of play that I think most of us are talking about when we talk about play is the child doing whatever the child wants to do as play. And that although we might guide it a little, we certainly wouldn't be pressuring children to play in a particular way. And I think that it's a good... If it's a short day program and the goal is to teach children some things that they need to know, it's essential that they enjoy themselves. But I'm not sure it's essential that they play.
I don't agree.
Yeah.
This has to be our last question. Would you identify yourself?
I'm Kathleen Alford, and I'm a graduate of the class of 96. And my question has to do with teacher preparation. There are some efforts going on statewide to help teachers become better prepared. And I think a lot of our discussion kind of goes back to the teacher and him or her being prepared to work with children. Can you talk a little bit about some of the efforts on the national level as well as the state level for teacher preparation?
What I think about that's sort of new and commanding at least my attention is coaching. And there does seem to be a body of research that says that when you can engage the teacher in the use of new knowledge, they are apt to make it their own faster and make better use of it. So how do we help teachers do that? And clearly, if it is done in the classroom, it seems to have better take than if you just talk about it in this kind of a setting. So one of my questions is, how do we prepare a whole cadre of coaches who know how to work with teachers in their own classrooms to help them translate the principles that we are talking about here into activities within their classroom? And I think that it is not easy, and I think that it is a more expensive form of education than the traditional ways that we have educated teachers. And those of you who went to Erickson know that the kind of emphasis we put on getting into the classroom and practice and reflection about practice and people visiting you in your classroom, that it's a very expensive form of education, but it is a more effective form of education, I think, than just talking about it in an adult setting.
Well, let me share with you, and I absolutely agree with Barbara about that, but let me share with you a panel that I'm on that is intended to look at the next step for teacher preparation. It's sponsored by NCATE, which is the national, what does NCATE stand for? Everyone knows what it is, but you don't know what it stands for. National Certification of Teacher Education or something like that. All right. Most colleges
for accreditation of education,
what?
National Council for Accreditation.
She got it.
Education.
National Council for Accreditation Teacher Education. Most colleges of education can't give their degrees if they aren't accredited by NCATE. That happens through ISBE here. And also the other organization is NICHD, National Institute for Child Health and Human Development. And they put together a panel, which I'm a member of all kinds of remarkable educators and deans and stuff like that, to talk about something that they consider to be really the next step in teacher education. And the next step is the role of developmental knowledge in teacher education, of knowledge of development in teacher education. Well, I thought that was a great idea. And then they passed around 10 things we should read before the first meeting, 10 articles. Two of them were by Barbara and by Fran. I'm right there. And so now that's not to say that we're self-satisfied and that we're doing our whole thing, and but we probably think we are, because we don't think we are. In fact, we are right now here at Erickson in the process this year of reviewing our entire curriculum and thinking about how we can improve it, how we can refine it, sharpen it, how we can bring make it more appropriate for more tied to what we know about families, what we know about different languages, what we know about special needs, and so forth. And so we're always doing that. But I got to say that where Barbara and Lorraine and Maria Pierce started from, the model of tutorial that we have here, which Barbara described as very expensive, which I, as a person who has to worry about making our costs here, agree is very expensive, but very, very central, that the place of development in education and in working with children and learning about children throughout, it really, I think, is the right thing to do. And I think that's why we have been so successful, and we owe it all to the people who came before us, and for me, it's all of you, because almost all of you came before me, alumni as well, and we intend to continue that, moving in that direction, and try to expand it, because one of the things that we're excited about here now is that we are going to try to move this online, that we are going to be adding an MA program online, and the challenge for us is to maintain the sense of intimacy and the sense of the importance of understanding child development in all these areas of working with children and families, even in an online environment. I believe we will succeed at that, but it will be a lot of work to get there.
Do you want to add anything?
No, I'm just glad he has to pay for it, not me.
Well, that brings to an end our wonderful discussion with Barbara and Sam this afternoon. We want to thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.